This is Playing with Fire. He's at the 20, the 10, the 5. Touchdown!
3 seconds remaining. 2-1. Shots up. It's good!
Here's the pitch, the swing. It's a long fly ball. It's going. It's gone! Revealing the secrets of the elite athlete. But be careful. You're playing with fire.
In this podcast, an interview with starting tight end for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Kyle Brady. Music by Justin Shaw. Performance enhancement tips and much, much more. Welcome to our first episode of Playing with Fire. My name is Dr. Bill Thierfelder, and I'm going to be your host for this show. My background, just to give it to you briefly, I was a two-time All-American in track and field at the University of Maryland, competed internationally, went on to be a Division I coach at Boston University, and from there finished my doctoral work in sports psychology and human movement. I'm a licensed psychologist. From a career standpoint, I've done a number of things in sport, from running founding a sports physical therapy corporation. I run a sports representation company, mostly representing NFL players. And finally, more recently, before coming to be the president of Belmont Abbey College, I was running York Barbell Company, which is some of you may recognize the name from the plates that you lift at the gym. It was a health and fitness company that made Olympic weights and equipment for not only the Olympic Games, but for athletes all over the world, many pro athletes in this country. What led me to the show, to develop it, Playing with Fire, is a good friend of mine some time ago said, you know, sport was a tool for life. And I've always liked that thought because I think anybody that's competed or trained in sport knows that that's true, the sacrifice that you make and so forth. And so what I'm looking at now is really going beyond just a tool for life, but being more specific and saying, how can you have world-class performance and still have virtue? And I think that's really what we're trying to accomplish as we move forward, meaning how can sport be a means for developing virtue? And that's what we're going to look into here over the next weeks and months and hopefully years.
It brings me great joy to introduce one of our guests today. His name is Kyle Brady. He's a former All-American with Penn State. He was a first-round draft pick by the New York Jets in 1995, I believe, a 12-year starter at tight end, both for the New York Jets as well as the recent 8 years with Jacksonville Jaguars. And he is known certainly for his blocking ability, but I always like to point out that if you go back and look at the year 2000, you'll see that he had 64 receptions for 729 yards, averaging 11.4 yards per catch. So it's very clear to me that he's an outstanding receiving tight end as well. Unfortunately, he's so good at blocking, I think sometimes he's not always given that opportunity. So I want to welcome you, Kyle. It's great to have you here, and just want to say hello.
Thanks, Dr. Bill. It's great to be here, and thanks for the flattering remarks. Very nice of you.
What's interesting to me is, you know, the reason for this podcast and, you know, for the website, the reason I did this is I wanted to draw attention to the fact that you can compete at a world-class level and do it even better by focusing on virtue as opposed to vice. But one thing I'd be interested in your thoughts, you know, what is the value or role of sport today? You know, can it be something for the good? So you're describing all these things you do in sport, but is sport itself, like, does it have some role in helping you, you know, from that spiritual standpoint?
I think without question. I mean, I like to say that sport in many ways is a microcosm of life. You experience so many things on the field of competition that are so similar to things you're going to experience in life, and sometimes maybe even on a bit more of an intense scale. You're going to have disappointments, tremendous disappointments. You're going to have pain at times. You're going to have just times where things are very mundane and monotonous, and you're going to have other moments of extreme excitement and joy and elation. And understanding and learning through the means of your reason and your ration, the fact that you're a rational human being, and through your faith, you know, using all those things as a filter for those experiences helps you to just really understand life better and how to approach life. Maybe, you know, for people who competed when they were younger, it didn't always go the way you wanted it to go, and there was a lot of adversity. And you know, you can call upon those experiences later in life, I think, to say, you know, I remember when I ran cross country and I turned my ankle that one year, and things just never seemed to go well, but I just kept on pushing on and persevering and working hard, and things turned out pretty well by the end of the year. Well, you know, all those things, and you see where I'm going, it can just be so easily carried over and transferred to all of life. I mean, whether it's marriage or parenting or anything, I mean, there's some very real lessons to be learned.
And you know, I guess the question I have then is, I agree with you completely. We've talked about this over the years and observed it and tried to live it. You know, this idea that sport can be a means for developing virtue. But why do you think there's so much vice? Like, why is there so much bad habits and examples in sport today? You know, and I'm sure if you had all the solutions, we'd be set. But, you know, if you have some ideas, like, what could counteract it? But first of all, why do they exist? Why is it the way it is today? Why is it the poster child for vice sometimes?
Well, sometimes it's just the very root nature of mankind. I mean, we do have a sinful nature we have to deal with. And sometimes when you add the various components of the professional athlete lifestyle, say with money and the recognition and prestige, that kind of thing, sometimes it's just the average human vice, which is in all of us, coming out on a grander scale, because I think there's more opportunity for it to come out. And, you know, there's, you know, you see the commentary that goes on among all these many, many talking heads, and it seems like even that has increased manyfold in the last 15 to 20 years, as far as you can flip channels and see 5 to 10 different channels now where people are talking about sport and making different analogies and just talking about it in very rude and vulgar ways, and it rubs off. I mean, the popular media culture, I think, has had a tremendous impact on the minds of young athletes and how they ought to compete, and then a lot of the athletes, you know, acting as if it's not a means to by which to express your faith and to pursue virtue, but instead it's a means by which to pursue all these other things that we're saying. So, you know, those things have an impact. They have a trickle-down effect. I think it starts with the professional ranks, and it goes all the way down to the Little League. I mean, I go out to midget league games, and my brother-in-law runs a flag football league, and I'm amazed to hear some of the things that happen, especially among the adults. I mean, the coaches, it's so unfortunate. But then the players, too. They have the attitude. They try to act like the big leaguers, you know, and unfortunately the big leaguers are more and more acting like children.
Now it's time for What's Hot.
You know, I received an interesting phone call last year. It was from a Father Lixie, and he was calling me from Rome. And he had heard about me with sport and some of the things that I've done with athletes and some of my background. And so he invited me over to the first meeting of a department that was created by John Paul II before he died, called Church and Sport. And basically what it was is taking people from all over the world, bringing them together, and seeing if we could come up with maybe some foundational document or basic understanding of the importance of sport and what should it be as it relates to our faith. And so I was looking forward to it, went over. It's a beautiful place. If you've never been to Rome, I'd advise you all go immediately. It's a great place. We met at this Pontifical Council of the Laity in the Vatican, and it was really wild. You know, you go in, and they have all these tables set up, and there's headphones there, and the back wall is all these, like, kind of smoked panel glass, and behind it you can see, you know, all these people at desks, and at first you don't know what it is, and it turns out these are interpreters. Because you're bringing together people from, you know, the seven continents. Everybody speaks different languages. Everybody comes from a different background. It was really amazing. There were theologians, philosophers, pro athletes, coaches, media people, politicians, Vatican officials. It was really remarkable mixture of humanity in this room. And it almost made it difficult for me to figure out how are we going to come away with something that we can all understand, some kind of foundational document to guide us as we go back to our own countries and our own, you know, places in life. And then I realized actually we had one. At least we have one that I've really enjoyed and have focused on, and I'd share it with you, and I hope that you'll learn it and memorize it as I have and share it with those that you get to know. But it goes like this. It says, sport, properly directed, develops character, makes a man courageous, a generous loser, and a gracious victor. It refines the senses, gives intellectual penetration, and steals the will to endurance. It is not merely a physical development then. Sport, rightly understood, is an occupation of the whole man. And while perfecting the body is an instrument of the mind, it also makes the mind itself a more refined instrument for the search and communication of truth, and helps man to achieve that end to which all others must be subservient, the service and praise of his Creator. And that was written by Pope Pius XII in 1945 as he addressed an athletic union. Praying Twice. This is Ready Lord by Justin Shaw.
I'm dedicating this song to my grandmother. For all the time she asked me, son, when you gonna give your life totally to God and stop running? Just submit your life. Well, listen, Granny, I wanna tell you I'm ready now. I'm not running no more.
That was Ready Lord by Justin Shaw. You can find a link to that song in our show notes at playingwithfirepodcast.com. It's your call. Many of you may know the story of Jesse Owens in the 1936 Olympics and the incredible performances that he had. But one story that really stood out for me was the story about his long jump competition. He was down to his third jump. He had fouled twice, and I don't know if you know the long jump, but you have three jumps to actually make the finals, meaning you have to have a mark that is in the top, you know, 6 to 8, and based on that performance, you make it into the finals. But he had fouled on his first two jumps, meaning he crossed the board, and so he had no measured jump to that point in time. And so he was down to his last jump, and there was a German athlete there by the name of Lutz Long. And as you may know, the whole politics of this time with, you know, the Nazi Party and, you know, here was the United States and democracy and freedom and Jesse Owens, an African American, and then the whole thing with Hitler with the Aryan race and supremacy and all these kinds of things. So it was an incredibly tense time. And here was Lutz Long, who was the favorite to actually win the long jump that year, went down to Jesse Owens and said, look, you are jumping far enough to qualify, so just move your mark back. I'm going to put a towel down here before the board. Just take off at the towel. You're going to jump far enough, and you'll qualify. And so Jesse Owens did just that and ends up qualifying for the finals. And in the end, he ends up beating Lutz Long for the gold medal. Well, you know, it's said that Hitler slighted Jesse Owens, left the stadium, all these kinds of things so he could avoid not having to confront him and offer him the wreath and the gold medal. But that's not where the story ends. That much I know is true. But the part that I'm not sure of, and I'd like to know if anybody would know the answer to this, is that I read a story that was kind of a postscript to this that I had never heard before, and it's an amazing story. Shortly after the Olympics were over, Lutz Long was actually sent to the Russian front. He was killed there. Well, the story goes on to say that a few years later, Lutz Long's daughter was getting married. And at the time, Jesse Owens actually came to the wedding and walked her up the aisle in place of her father, who had lost his life. And I thought that was the most remarkable story about virtue and friendship. And I don't know whether it's true or not. I'd like to think it is, but I'm hoping that somebody would know the answer and be able to send that in to me. So if anybody knows the answer to that, please respond to me. And if you have any other comments or questions, I welcome those as they relate to any aspect of sport and virtue and, you know, the physical, the mental, all those kinds of things. And you can reach me at feedback@playingwithfirepodcast.com. And I'll look forward to hearing from you soon. It's time to get physical with Skills and Drills. Today I thought I'd pick out something really practical, something that's going to help you actually improve your performance. You know, very often we all think that, you know, I'm just going to get stronger. So you go into the weight room, you keep lifting weights, you're trying to lift as much weight as you can, you're getting stronger and stronger, and you say, this is really going to help me with my athletic performance. Well, that may or may not be true. Certainly there's a benefit to being strong, but I don't know if you realize this, there's a thing called rate of force development. Now, you might be wondering, what the heck is rate of force development, RFD? Well, we all do it in sport. So if you jump, you run, you cut, you know, any kind of fast movement involves rate of force development. What that really means is that when you are running, jumping, cutting, that motion, that movement happens in less than 3 milliseconds. That's, you know, when they say faster than the blink of an eye, it is faster than the blink of an eye, 0.3 milliseconds. That's incredibly short period of time. But here we are in the weight room, we're lifting, we're trying to do squats, we're doing benching, we're doing all these things. And really what we don't realize is that you only can use the strength that you can create in that 3 millisecond period of time. So you could lift 1,000 pounds, but if you can't lift 1,000 pounds in 3 milliseconds, it's useless. It does nothing for you at that time. So the question is, how much force can you develop in 3 milliseconds? Now, that's what power is. So you hear this term a lot, you know, strength, power, you know, speed. Well, power is that explosiveness. That's how you jump higher. That's how you get off a line faster. That's how you hit somebody harder. So how do you develop that? Well, part of it's in the way that you train. As an example, you want to work with kind of reps and sets of maybe 3 sets of 3 repetitions, and you'd be doing it at a high intensity level, like 90% or higher. Very often, if you've used these things called plyometrics, you also might have heard the term stretch short cycle. These are things where there's a very explosive movement built into what you're doing. So, for example, just standing up on a box that maybe is only 1 foot high and jumping off, you're hitting the ground with at least 3 times your body weight. And then to explode back up off the ground, that's forcing your muscles to stretch. It stores up this elastic energy, and then it explodes. And that's really what your power comes from. So just remember in the future that lifting really heavy, heavy weights is good. It's good to have this kind of maximum strength. But at a certain point, it doesn't help you with your performance on the field. Iron will. Over the years, I've worked with thousands of athletes. And I've never met one that if they knew all their skills, talents, and abilities came out in the present moment, right where they're there, about to play, they weren't happy. Almost everybody's happy as long as they know their best came out. Well, for a lot of us, though, we experience a lot of frustration when we're performing because we don't feel like it did get to come out. So I wanted to talk about in this segment, how do you ensure that your 100% will come out? Well, first of all, you hear coaches often say, or even athletes, you know, I gave it my 110%. Well, I have to tell you, I don't know where you're getting that 10% from because there is no secret slice under the pie. There is only 100%. And the most you could hope for is the whole 100% will come out when you're about to perform. So the key is to figure out first what it is you should be focused on. So let's just take basketball as an example. You're playing a game. We'll make it exciting. It's the end of the game. There's a few seconds left. And you're on the foul line. Well, right now, the only thing that can help you, if you think about it, is seeing the basket and feeling your body move in space. Knowing where your body is in space helps you to know that you're, you know, technically in the right position. So those two things are the only thing at this present moment that can help you. And so if you put all 100% of your attention, your focus, your awareness on those two things, that's as good as it gets. But think about what happens. We tend to go to the foul line. We want to give the 100%. We intend to give it. But what ends up happening is, oh, man, I missed my last two foul shots. Well, take away 10% for that thought. Mom and dad are in the stands with the camera. Well, take away 15% for that thought. Coach is yelling some instruction at you right now as you're about to go take this shot. Take away 10% for that thought. Guy next to you makes a comment to you about something to do with your ability. What does that have to do with seeing the basket, feeling your body? Nothing. Take away another 10% for that thought. Well, when you start to add this all up, you may get down to where you're actually standing at the foul line with maybe 30 or 40% of your ability, actually focused on what helps you to shoot. So think about this. If you're only going to the foul line with 30 or 40% of your ability focused on taking the shot, what's most likely going to happen? Or what has a good chance to happen is that you're going to miss the shot. And then what's amazing is that what do we say after we miss the shot? We say, oh, I knew it, you know? Well, our problem is not focusing on what it takes. And so the key is not to focus our attention on anything except what can help us in the present moment. The way you do that is by focusing on detail. The more detail you absorb yourself in, the more focused you are. The tendency for all of us that play a sport or participate in something and we see it all the time is that we get used to seeing it. And so we stop paying attention to the details. So you start looking at a basket. Yeah, yeah, I've seen the basket. I know, but look at the basket in detail. Can you see a scratch on the rim that you're aiming at? You know, in feeling your body, can I feel my elbow? Can I feel my hips? Not talking to yourself, can you just feel your body in space? And if you put all of your attention on that and you have an ability to put a ball in a basket, most likely it's going to go in. And so the key here is not to focus on the ego part of it, but to focus on the task at hand.
Soul food.
Gratitude. You know, we often hear that word, but I don't know if we think about it. We know it means thankfulness, you know, to be, you know, appreciative of something somebody does for us or gives us and so forth. But I don't know if we really, really take it to heart and understand it. I certainly don't think we're overwhelmed by the word in our life. We think it's like any other word. But let me do a little exercise with you right now. What I'd like you to do is if you can grab a piece of paper and a pen, I'd like you to do that. And if you can't, just at least do this mentally. You know, if you're driving a car or running or, you know, just listening to this while you're walking, you know, do it in your mind. But what I want you to do right now is I want you to think about all the things in your life that are invaluable, that you can't put a dollar figure on, that are beyond value, beyond worth, okay? Couldn't put a dollar figure on it. And I want you to write those down or at least think about them. And what I'm going to ask you to do is just pause your player for a few minutes while you do that, and then as soon as you've done it, turn it back on and come back. Okay, so you've got this list, whether it's in your mind or on the piece of paper. Now, I can just tell you, without even being there with you, most people that I've asked to do this, and I've done it with large audiences of people, they start off, I see them put their heads down, you know, and they start writing, and they, you know, I see one go down, and I see two, you know, and they kind of look up, and they're thinking, and then they look back down, they write it down again, another one, and then it starts to slow down, and, you know, I give people 2, 3, 4 minutes to do this, and then I say, okay, everybody, raise your hand if you got at least one. Now, you don't have to raise your hand, especially if you're driving or something, but, you know, raise your hand if you got at least one. Well, everybody in the whole room raises their hand, and then I say, okay, keep your hand up if you got at least two. Everybody still has their hand up. I say three, hands are still up. Now I say four, And I tell you, probably half the room goes down. Then I'll say five. And now I'm down to maybe a quarter of the room. And once I go past five, there's almost nobody with their hand still raised. And then I say to them, how many of you wrote down your right retina? Or your left aorta? Or your brainstem? Now you might be going, what? And I know when I say this to people in a crowd, they look at me at first like I'm out of my mind. But now think about this. Your brainstem, which is part of your brain that controls your body, would you give it up for all the money in the world? Well, if you did, you wouldn't exist anymore, so I don't think so. But we start going through this list, what you're starting to recognize is that we're not appreciating the things that are truly that we wouldn't put a dollar value on. You wouldn't give me your legs. You wouldn't give me your eyesight. You wouldn't give me your hearing. You know, and we could keep going through this on a very detailed level, and really what you're going to find is the list is almost infinite. You should need pads of paper. You know, the office truck should be pulling up with the pads so you can keep writing these things down. Now think about this. That's just about you. How about the people in your life, like your family, like your parents, your siblings, your brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, friends? Can you imagine? All of them, you wouldn't want those things to be removed from them either. So this is just awesome. It's overwhelming that the amount of gifts that we have that we don't appreciate. And our human nature is kind of strange. All we do is complain and think about what we don't have. So what do we say? Oh, today was so tough. Today was such a hard day. Oh, dragged on forever. Oh, I can't believe I have to do this. I can't believe somebody did that to me. We're always focused on what we don't have, and we rarely reflect on what we have. And so the virtue of gratitude is a really important one for us to live a really happy, joyful life. Because once you recognize that everything you have practically is a blessing beyond your ability to understand or ever be thankful enough for, you are wealthy beyond, you know, Bill Gates has nothing on you. You are the wealthiest person in the world. And therefore, you should be freed up to go share that with everybody else you meet. Well, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Show notes and a free subscription information are available on our website, playingwithfirepodcast.com. And I'd love for you to send me some feedback, comments, stories, whatever you might have at feedback@playingwithfirepodcast.com. And I'll look forward to seeing you next time. Take care and God bless.